Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Microsoft MVP Mitch Garvis is back for today's show as he and John Weston dissect what's new in Hyper-V for Windows Server 2012 and how it compares to VMware. Tune in for another Just the Facts, No Holds Barred discussion on how Microsoft's private cloud solutions stack up against the competition. John, the mic is yours.
Hello and welcome to today's TechNet Radio Community Corner. I'm John Weston with Microsoft, and today I've got one of my great returning guests, Mitch Garvis from Canada. Welcome, Mitch.
How are you doing, John? It's always great to be back.
Doing wonderful, and I understand today is your birthday. Happy birthday, Mitch.
Thank you very much. I assume that when the listeners listen, it won't be my birthday, but guys, I still accept gifts, and if you want to put one thing at the top of my list, an HP TouchSmart, the 23-inch model with the 8 gigs of RAM, I can give you the shipping address.
All right. Well, we'll definitely keep you in mind for next year if we don't get it, you know, to your birthday this time. But great. Well, welcome to today. And the topic I wanted to talk about today was Hyper-V. I mean, I know last time we did a little bit of comparison between VMware, since both you and I are certified in VMware, and Microsoft's virtualization product Hyper-V. But today, let's kind of talk about what is the Hyper-V of today and then the future with Hyper-V 3.0. When is 3.0 coming out?
Well, Windows Server 2012 is going to come out on its release date.
We don't know when that is, right? So it's when it's ready.
Now, if we wanted to speculate based on historical realities, Server 2008 was released in November. Server 2008 R2 was released in November. And Server 2012 is, we are being told, going to be released in the second half of calendar year 2012.
So,
well, you draw your own conclusions, John.
Right.
I'm not going to get in trouble or be hung out to dry.
Me either.
Yeah.
So tell us some of the new features in Hyper-V 3 or why someone might want to consider Hyper-V for their virtualization solution.
You know, Hyper-V, I've been telling people for about 12 months or longer, since Service Pack 1 for 2008 R2 came out, that they should really be considering making the switch now. Just because, look, VMware is a great product. You and I have discussed this before. I don't have a bad thing to say about the product. The cost can be a prohibitive factor. And there was a time when you didn't have a choice, because if you went back even 3 years, VMware did things that Microsoft didn't do.
Right.
Now, Microsoft is closing that gap. And as Hyper-V got better in 2008 R2, and then even better still with 2008 R2 Service Pack 1, we were at a position where, well, you know, maybe Microsoft does 90, even a little more than 90% of what VMware does, and for the cost difference, we should look at it. But of course, the VMware enthusiasts and religionists would continue to say, yeah, but they're still, they don't scale out. They don't have the scalability. They don't have storage vMotion. They don't have all sorts of these features that you need in your data center. And that reminds me very much of a speech by Steve Jobs, who always told us what we need. Oh my God, all of a sudden Apple's put a solid-state drive into their computers. Now you need a solid-state drive. Before that, there's no need for a solid-state drive. Well, I don't want anyone telling me what I need in my data center. I want to be able to evaluate the features for myself and the cost related to those features and say, well, here's what I have, and here's what I can have for X dollars, and here's what I would get if I were to spend Y dollars. And the Y dollars is, I mean, I didn't choose it on purpose, but how fortuitous, because why would I spend all of those dollars if I don't really need the specific features? So now we look at the big argument that Hyper-V isn't scalable and isn't ready for the enterprise. And there is a page on VMware.com that I referenced I didn't reference it. That wouldn't be fair. I ripped it to shreds point by point. They have a page called Get the Facts about Microsoft's Hyper-V, which, by the way, is a very catchy play on words. If you know, most people don't know what hyperbole is, but I thought that was a very good play on words. And it lists all sorts of things like Hyper-V isn't scalable. Well, let's look at the numbers. In Hyper-V in 2012, Hyper-V 3.0 as it's currently being called, you have 1 terabyte of RAM per virtual machine. That's the same as vSphere 5.0. You have up to 160 logical processors per host. That's the same as vSphere 5. We have 1,024 virtual machines per host. Wait a minute. vSphere 5 is only 512 virtual machines per host. We have 64 nodes per cluster. Wait a minute. vSphere 5 is only 32 nodes per cluster. So if I have 1,000, if my virtual machine capabilities in the VM are the same, and my abilities or my limits in the host are double, and my number of hosts per cluster are double in VMware, in Hyper-V over VMware, and wait a minute, then we say that in a failover cluster in Server 2012, you can have up to 4,000 virtual machines per cluster. Wait a minute, in vSphere 5, that's only 1,000. All of a sudden, how do they tell us that our solution isn't scalable? Because it sounds to me, and I'm not a mathematician or a computer expert or a virtualization guru, oh, wait a minute, I'm all that. But you don't have to be. You have to have grade 7 arithmetic to realize that it's us who should be looking at them and saying, well, is ESX really scalable and is it ready for the enterprise? Because it doesn't scale up. Because we've got them beat on that, or Hyper-V has them beat on that. Now, their argument is going to be, yes, but you can have more, because of the way Microsoft's failover clustering works, you can have more than, once you have half of your nodes in the cluster go down, your entire cluster goes down. That's true. That's just the nature of failover clustering. And we can talk about node and disk majority and all of that great stuff. But the bottom line is when you have a stable operating environment and a stable cluster on good, reliable hardware, if you have 10 nodes in a cluster and you have opportunity for 5 of them to go down, no, you've got node and disk majority. So you'd have to have 6 nodes in your cluster go down. What are you doing? What are you sitting on that you haven't realized, oh, my God, the first node in my cluster went down. I should be looking at it. Wait, oh, my God, a second node went down. I've really got to get off my butt and stop playing tiddlywinks and start realizing why nodes in my cluster are going down. So, yes, VMware has the ability when everything's going to hell in a handbasket to theoretically get all of your thousands of virtual machines onto fewer hosts. But if those fewer hosts support fewer virtual machines, then I don't really see how that argument holds a lot of water. And by the way, maintain your hardware so that half your nodes don't go down at any given point.
Yeah, that's great information. So I've also heard that Windows 8, obviously, is the new client that we've got coming out for Windows. It's going to be a touch-based interface with a Metro style, but it's also going to have Hyper-V 3 in it. So now, finally, you'll be able to, on a Windows-based guest OS, do a 64-bit virtualization guest environment. Is that correct with Hyper-V 3?
How cool is this? We have Hyper-V on the client. And I wrote an article about that on my blog at www.garvis.ca, best site on the internet. Check it out. And I wrote step-by-step how to install it, what the requirements are. You still need second-level address translation or SLAT. You still need a virtualization-enabled CPU. All of the requirements that you need on Hyper-V on the server, you have on the client. But, John, if you've bought a laptop that doesn't have an Atom processor in the last 6 years, it's got all of that.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I've got a Windows 8 machine running Hyper-V guests, and that's really, really cool because, you know what, it's nice that I have a virtual machine at the office that I want to take home with me, but if it's a 64-bit machine, I couldn't do that on the client before, unless, of course, I had a third-party hypervisor. By the way, the one that I would have chosen was VMware Workstation, great 64-bit hypervisor on the Windows 8 client. I don't need that anymore. That's $199 that I don't have to spend, and I can run my entire test lab. You know people like you and me, we spend our life on the road doing demonstrations of Hyper-V, and all of a sudden, oh my God, I can do this all in two laptops running my failover cluster instead of having two laptops and my presentation machine.
Right.
I had one client and two servers. I don't need to do that anymore. This is great. This is the selling feature that I'm going to tell people. They say to me, why should I look to Windows 8? Because if you're an IT professional and you're not using Hypervisor, start investing in hot dog stands because you're going to lose out. You're not going to be an IT professional for much longer if you don't do virtualization. You and I have discussed that.
Yep.
So Hyper-V...
A really easy upgrade, like $39 if you're Windows 7 or even XP, to go to Windows 8. So, you know, if you've got the hardware... You got...
Oh, no. I actually heard you and Chris talking about this off air when my mic wasn't working, so I couldn't chime in. Not only is it a $39.99 upgrade if you're running Windows XP or if you're running Windows Vista or Windows 7, but if you are on the release preview of Windows 8, you will also have that ability. How cool is that?
So I've got a bare machine. I'm testing out Windows 8 with it, and I'm looking at the release candidate there, the release preview, I guess it's called officially. I get that same $39 price. How cool.
That is. Now, I haven't read the articles. I would be willing to bet that it would be an upgrade license. You would have to have an OEM sticker at the bottom that had your license for Windows 7 before. But, oh, my God, how cool is this?
Way to get into the new Windows client and into Hyper-V, much different than the competitor space.
And for people like you and me who spend our lives evangelizing Microsoft technology, how often do you hear the argument, oh, Microsoft is releasing another operating system, it's another time for a cash grab?
Yep.
$40, that's not going to pay for the development. I mean, they're going to make their money going forward on OEM and FPP and enterprise licenses, but they are not trying to make – this isn't the cash grab for the upgrades. I mean, even Mac doesn't charge that little. They charge, I think, $50 to upgrade from Cat version old to Cat version new.
Yep, and we want everybody off of Windows XP before support goes away for that and 600 some odd.
640 days from today, 640 kilobytes in our original PCs. Is that a coincidence? Maybe so, maybe not. But either way, you've got 640 days. And by the way, you heard it here first. From today, the day that Windows XP support ends, the party is in Toronto, folks. We are going to be throwing a big bash. As you know, John, for the last 500 days, I've been counting down every day on Twitter to end of days XP. Follow the hashtag. Yep. If you're not sure, hashtag end of days XP. Now, in Toronto, we are going to throw a big blowout bash where everybody's going to have start shirts that are green start shirts that are crossed out with a big Windows pearl and a Metro driving through it.
That's great.
I'm not sure what we're going to do, but we are going to throw a bash just you wait and see. I'm going to throw a party for that day.
That's great. Well, what else about Hyper-V have we not covered that you want to make sure that either you've written about or you want to tell us about, make sure everybody knows about Hyper-V?
Oh, first of all, before we get into networking, and networking is really cool. in Hyper-V 2008 R2, as is in vSphere 5.0 and 5.1, I believe, we had a limit of 2 terabytes for a virtual hard disk, either VHD or VMDK file. Now, with a new file format called VHDX, we keep putting that X in there. This is an X-rated drive because it's obscene how big it gets. It is, all of a sudden, a 64-terabyte virtual hard disk. All of the people said, I can't put my SQL server into a virtual machine. My SQL servers, my Oracle servers, are going to be bigger than 2 terabytes. Well, here you go, 64 terabytes per virtual hard drive. Now, you can make a VMDK file in vSphere up to 64 terabytes, but that requires 32 extents. An extent is literally a building block onto another. And it's essentially they're taking VMDK files and scotch taping them together. And they always said, this is a temporary measure that you should use when you need to do a temporary, but it should never be a permanent fix. Now they're saying, hey, it's a permanent fix. Well, okay. I'm going to trust my VHD X file before I do that. Now, let's talk about support for UEFI boot systems. VMware is offering better graphical experience in your virtual machines that now support aerographic capabilities in Windows 7. Well, guess what? Remote FX in Server 2012 is going to be through the roof. All of the people who said, you know what, I can't do remote FX because I don't want to invest in a $1,000 graphical processor unit, you don't need to spend the money on the GPU anymore. We've got software GPU. It's all in there. We've got huge advantages in the VDI space, which I'm going to talk about with you on a later show. We've got features such as third-party distributed virtual network switches. Now, when vSphere 4.0 released, the big announcement was we have third-party distributed virtual network switches. And the first of many that will eventually be announced is the Cisco Nexus 1000V. Well, when they say the first of many, nobody else has heard of any others, although there are rumors and speculation. Well, okay, the 1000V did a great thing. It allowed your Cisco engineers, and let's face it, you and I are system administrators. We don't talk Cisco, or at least not to the degree that our CCNE friends want us to.
Right.
They were able to program their virtual switches in the same language as they were able to program their physical switches. Well, Microsoft is introducing that in Server 2012. We've got that. We've got shared nothing. How's that for a great term? Shared nothing. We have the ability to live migrate a virtual machine to without actually having shared storage. Previously, if you wanted a live migration or a failover scenario, you absolutely needed to have shared storage. There was no other way to do it. You built it in failover clustering. Well, now, hey, shared nothing. It's going to take longer because you're actually copying the bits of the VHD or the VHDX file over your network.
But the network's the guest is still running during that copy, right?
It's a fully live migration. There's absolutely no pause or hiccup involved. And what it does is it copies all of the bits from host A to host B. And, of course, by the time it's copied over, both the memory and the hard disk, there are deltas. So it then copies the deltas over. And it keeps doing that until the deltas are so small that we can quiesce the VM on host A and start it up on host B without even missing a hiccup. Now, that's huge because until we can start the virtual machine and have it running on host B, you're still running on host A. If the migration fails, the users don't know it. The applications don't know it. How's this? I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine who works at another virtualization provider that we may have mentioned or discussed once or twice on air, and they're starting to notice some traction. They're starting to see, unfortunately for them, but they're starting to have clients tell them, yeah, we're starting to build Hyper-V labs. We're starting to put Hyper-V into our environments as well. And what was more interesting was he said, and what's worse, I don't know how many of my clients are afraid to tell me that they're also running Hyper-V. Wow. Wow. And I said it to you the last time we spoke. I said, it looks like VMware doesn't get it. Well, John, VMware gets it now.
Yeah, they're definitely understanding the changes. So, well, I want to thank you for joining me today on the Community Corner here at TechNet Radio. Really been a great guest in this series. We'll continue to do more with Mitch. Let me give my contact information, and then we'll give Mitch a chance to tell how you can find out more information of his stuff online. Again, email to me is john.weston@microsoft.com. My primary blog is out there at blogs.technet.com/version of Windows Server 2012. Go to aka.ms/win8server and you can download the latest release of Windows Server 2012 and take a look at all the Hyper-V features we were just talking about. Mitch, you want to give your contact information?
I will, but before I do, I want you to give out, you also have a shortened link to download the System Center 2012.
Because absolutely. Yep, System Center is aka.ms/SYSCNTR, so System Center for short. So, all right, so tell us your information, Mitch.
Well, I'm Mitch Garvis, and you can reach me at my blog, which is garvis.ca, G-A-R-V-I-S.ca. And there are going to be a couple of articles that we discussed in this session that I think you guys are going to publish along with the segment. My Twitter, which you should follow me on, is at mgarvis. And if you really have to send me an email, I'd love to hear from you. It's Mitch at swmi.ca. And remember, SWMI stands for Secure, Well-Managed IT Infrastructure. And if you're not secure and well-managed, open a hot dog stand, guys.
Well, thanks again for joining me today on TechNet Radio. You have a great day, Mitch, and a good birthday.
Thank you.